You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Blake and Ulig and Teamsters Joint Council 56. Since 1972, Blake and Ulig has prided itself on providing comprehensive legal representation to labor organizations and their affiliated benefit funds on a local, regional, and national basis. And Teamsters Joint Council 56 and our 9 local unions represent 30,000 workers, retirees, and their families in Western Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska. We're proud to support the Heartland Labor Forum and their commitment to giving working families a voice in the greater Kansas City community. The Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI thank our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, Wyandotte County is electing a new mayor, and there are a lot of contenders for the job. On tonight's show, we'll have highlights from this week's candidate forum. Then, we'll have voices from the picket line at Frito-Lay in Topeka. There won't be any news. And our feature at the end of the show is Washington Window on Workers with Mark Grunberg, What You Can Do for Passage of the PRO Act. Now for the show. Hi, this is Judy Ansel. On Tuesday, 2 of the 5 candidates for mayor of the Unified Government of Wyandotte County participated in a forum. They were Janice Witt and Tyrone Garner. The other 3 candidates, incumbent Mayor David Alvey, former State Senator Chris Steiniger, and Darren Duffy, didn't participate. Of the non-attenders, Duffy identifies himself as a bought and paid for man of God. Steiniger says he's a former insider turned angry outsider who wants to lead a tax and a utility bill revolt. And Alvey, running for re-election, says he's a proud, unapologetic fifth-generation dot who comes from a long line of public servants. We're going to play segments of the forum, and you'll hear from the candidates who did attend on what ails WICO, tax abatements, and whether giving them to big box stores is worth it, safe and welcoming Wyandotte, which would provide a municipal ID and bar police, sheriffs, and all county employees from calling ICE on people they suspect are undocumented. Also, the candidates' views on the powers of the mayor and whether the government is unresponsive to the people. Stay tuned.
Good evening. I'm Michael Popa, Executive Director of the Mainstream Coalition, and thank you for joining this candidate forum, co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Johnson County, ACLU of Kansas, Dot Votes, Mid-America LGBT Chamber of Commerce, and Mainstream Coalition. Soon we'll be hearing from 2 candidates running for the mayor CEO of the Unified Government of Wyandotte County, Kansas City, Kansas. However, please note that all 5 candidates on the August ballot were invited to participate. Each candidate will be asked all questions. The candidates will then have 3 minutes to answer each of those questions. The partner organizations co-sponsoring this forum believe that democracy works best when citizens are informed and active. Thank you so much for taking the time to learn about the candidates currently running for office, the important issues surrounding these races. Now I'd like to welcome our moderator this evening, Chevette Dinkins with Dot Votes.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight we have Janice Witt and Tyrone Garner. Our first question will go to Tyrone Garner. Many say our community is divided. Do you think so? Why or why not?
I do believe it's divided. It's divided between the haves and have-nots. I call it economic segregation. When you drive from Eastern Wyandotte County into Western Wyandotte County, you see a difference, a stark, drastic difference. And going east, you see pockets of poverty. You see hopelessness. You see a lack of goods and services. You see individuals that live in areas of Wyandotte County that have been totally disinvested. And that didn't happen overnight. So there is a divide economically. I believe that what binds Wyandotte County together is that we're one great community with awesome people that want better. But what needs to happen is you need to have leadership and position that will make sure that the goods and services and that equity is not just seen in one part of the county, but is felt throughout Wyandotte County. Wyandotte County has shown where it sits geographically that it holds great potential to be a really great place to live and can be the beacon of success, not just in the metropolitan area, but throughout the nation with its just natural location and the highways that that run through it. So, yes, there is a divide. That divide needs to be addressed. And I'm optimistic that with the right leadership in office, that working in collaboration with everyday citizens, that success can be had and felt throughout.
Thank you. Janice Witt?
There is definitely a divide, but that divide has been a part of the foundations of Wyandotte County. So it's not a shock. It's nothing new. That certainly doesn't make it right, and it is not. But the good thing about Wyandotte County is that there is no railroad tracks. Our division remains in place by something that we can fix, and that is vote. If we change our leadership in this community and let our leadership know that there is an expectation that we all live equitably, I know Wyandotte County, I know the people in Kansas City, Kansas, and they will step up, they will change their ways, and they will help one another. This is the good thing about Wyandotte County, that no matter how great our difference is in times of sorrow and struggle, in times of pain, in times of lacks, we show up for each other. We arrive and we make change for our community overall.
Next question. We have seen numerous big box companies here in Wyandotte County. How does that benefit our community? What long-term negative impacts do you foresee? And with these types of sports for our economic growth, how do you plan to support small businesses in our community? This goes to Tyrone Garner.
Well, here's my issue. The question to me has always been, when you give huge tax abatements to huge corporations that don't need the money, don't share in the tax burden with the everyday tax payer in Wyandotte County, you ask yourself, what's the value? You look at a lot of the tags of some of these big corporations, a lot of the jobs aren't Wyandotte County jobs. And then you look at what are they paying, what some of these businesses are paying their employees. I've talked to some employees and some of them are working two jobs. You ask about benefits and they're not robust. So when you talk about bringing in jobs, businesses that can bring in jobs where people can earn a livable wage, I don't see the value in giving big corporate tax breaks to corporations that don't need it. And what happens is, if you give it to, if I'm a big corporate corporation and I see that another corporation got a tax break, then you run into, okay, I want what that corporation got. I want the 5, 10, 20 year tax abatement with all the infrastructure to go along with it and BPU to pay for that. And who pays for that in the end is the taxpayers. And you have to ask yourself, if you look at some of these businesses, just some of the developers that I've talked to have told me that some of these corporations have gotten these tax abatements. They've solidified whatever development they have, and then they sold it. And what do? They walk away and they pocket the profits. And the taxpayers are still held with those burdens. And so it affects our schools, which affects our children. If you have corporations that aren't paying their fair share, and then you talk about small businesses. Small businesses are hurting, especially in the area of COVID. We need to really take a look at entrepreneurship. I'm a big supporter of small businesses and making sure that they have the resources and the tools they need to be successful. The Latino community has shown that small businesses can really anchor people in our residential neighborhoods. And so I'm big on support of entrepreneurs and small businesses, and I want us to do a lot more in that area, looking at some of the fees that are associated with starting a small business and just streamlining that process to make it easier and more favorable for people to open a small business. And so I am a supporter of responsible tax abatements, not against it, but I am more favorable of supporting small businesses and entrepreneurs, because I think that is what is going to fuel the growth that is needed in Wyandotte County.
Thank you. Janice Witt.
Well, Wyandotte County is played much like an old game that used to be played at every table. And that game was Monopoly. And so I'm going to hold in front of you something. And I know it's backwards, but nonetheless, this is the game board that I put together to describe and to give a visual to the misuse and mismanagement and sheer greed that is a part of Wyandotte County, the Wyandotte County machine, in keeping our community divided. Without a divided community, the power structure of Wyandotte County would completely lose control of this community overall. When you say that there are big box companies that are brought here, and what benefit is there to the community of having those big box companies here? There is none. There is none. I can look at this Monopoly board, and I'm going to give you an example, because we all know what the problem is. And so we keep talking about it and hashing it out. But the reality is nothing is being done about it. These companies are brought in like the backyard barbecue. I don't even know if anybody remembers backyard barbecue now. But here a few years ago, a lot of our tax dollars went in to build backyard barbecue, backfire barbecue, and to buy them the best spoons and to buy the very best of motorcycles and all kind of paraphernalia that they wanted and needed in order to make their business work. They failed. And Wyandotte County, our leadership at Wyandotte County, had a nice big auction for all of their family and friends. And they sold off things like a $500,000 motorcycle for $24,000 or $26,000. These big box companies are doing what they are supposed to do. I'm not going to beat them up for doing good business. If somebody offers you the world for free on a platter, it would be poor business for you not to accept it. But as for our leadership, it is poor leadership for them to divest us in these types of things and have such poverty on the northeast end of town and such poverty within the core that looks very different than what most people consider poverty to be. There is no benefit for the community in these great gains. We had Walmart on 64th and we gave them a 40-year abatement. As soon as that 40 years hit, the Legends was built. Walmart wanted out there. They made it perfectly clear. There you go. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to a candidate forum for mayor of the Unified Government of Wyandotte County. The candidates are Tyrone Garner and Janice Witt.
Next question will be for you, Tarwan Garner. The UG charter states the mayor is responsible for hiring and firing the county administrator with approval by the commission. How much oversight and evaluation should the mayor provide of the work of the county administrator?
Well, my understanding of the charter is that is somewhat correct, yes. I do believe that the mayor has a responsibility to the voters, to the people of Wyandotte County, to ensure that the will of the people is being met, that the voices of the people are being heard, and the reasonable expectations that people have for their government to work equitably for everyone is being carried out. And I believe the mayor, being an extension and the voice for the community, has a great responsibility to oversee the administrator's office and that staff. I believe in trusting but verifying, and making sure that the things that go on the agenda reflect those things that I talked about that are voiced by the people. And so, yes, I think the charter needs to be looked at. It hasn't been looked at. It has been open since its inception in 1997. It needs to be reviewed so it better reflects the values of the day. I think it is somewhat imbalanced. I do believe that the administrator's office has too much power, and there needs to be a balance brought to where the administrator's office is more accountable to the mayor and the commission, and that that the mayor should have more influence over the direct activities of the administrator. Right now, a lot of people have told me that the way they view it is the tail is wagging the dog, because you have an unelected administrative staff that hires, fires, controls all the resources, the development proposals, and where a lot of those things go. And the mayor and the commission don't have that power uniformity like the administrator does. So there are some adjustments that I would like to see to the charter that would give the mayor and administrator a little bit better control, influence, oversight of the administrator's office to better reflect the will of the people.
Thank you. Janice Witt.
The charter is established, and it was established on credible evidence that what it was offering to the people was capable of being reached. The important part of that charter is that there was no policy built into the charter to address what happens if these things are not met, let's say, benchmarks are not met within a certain amount of time. So when the charter was put in place, it promised to do away with redundancy positions. It promised to not have both county and city billings from, let's just say, BPU. That didn't happen. Instead, these, what we now call machine workers, began to dig in where they were, and their positions became legislated as a part of the established charter, mainly because there was no policy put in place to make them address that issue. We do have policy in place that says that the city administrator has evaluations, except none of our commissioners chose to fire him. I think Mike Kane stood up and requested that he be terminated after I went 3 years ago and stood in that chamber and demanded that Doug Bach be terminated for lack of doing his job according to the contract in that charter. So yes, we have a strong mayor position. And I believe that we have a weak mayor, and I know that I will be a strong mayor for the people to ensure that their funds, that their benefits, that their access to services remains constitutionally sound by representation for the taxation that we are all subject to.
Thank you. The next question is yours. So the Safe and Welcoming Coalition has been trying for 4 years now to get the Safe and Welcoming Ordinance heard by the commission with community input and have not been successful. How can you assure that all members of the community can easily bring issues to the commission and be provided public testimony in all hearings?
I believe that it is unconstitutional. See, we're not just Kansas City, Kansans. We are not just dots. We are Americans. And our Constitution states perfectly clearly that there shall be no taxation without representation. Right now in Kansas City, Kansas, we are being taxed without being represented. Our commissioners hold meetings and an unelected official is deciding what is happening to our assets in private door meetings and under the table agreements that are not only out of order in Wyandotte County, they are unconstitutional. We pay taxes. Those taxes benefit us, the ability to be heard. We are being absolutely taken advantage of in that not only do we not get to speak at these meetings without having previously made a request, but that we don't get to be heard at all because our commissioners will not call us back. So there is no way that we are getting representation for our taxation. Now, Safe and Welcoming was your question, but I will tell you that if the folks who are standing up fighting for Safe and Welcoming, and we should all be fighting that we can feel safe and welcome, then I say kudos to them. If that is what is important to their area and to their hearts, they have every right to demand to be safe and welcome and to be heard about that circumstance.
Thank you. Next up is Tyrone Garner.
Well, I think in regards to Safe and Welcoming, you know my position on that. If I remember your question right, how come it hasn't moved forward? I keep going back to the reoccurring theme of leadership, not just leadership, but engaged leadership. My campaign is one that's built on a foundation of love for people and for this county, as well as making sure that the will of the people is met. My campaign talks about being community driven. You got to have a mayor that has a connection and wants to have a connection with the community and meet with the community, find out what the needs and the requests of the community are. Not so much of demanding or hoping that the people will come to you, but you need to go where the people are, meet with them, talk with them, communicate with them, understand as opposed to be, seek to understand as opposed to be of trying to be understood. Take that information back and stand with the reasonable expectations that a majority of the community may have and the issues that are important to them, and work with the administrator and the elected officials and put those issues on the table. The mayor has, in collaboration with the administrator, the ability to control what's on the agenda. And that reflects what the 10 commissioners will review, discuss, and ultimately vote on. So when you talk about leadership in that regard, I say that Tyrone Garner will do those things that I just talked about. Value people. If it's important to the people, it's going to be important to me. I'm going to push those things forward, and I'm going to make sure that the agenda reflects that as allowed by the charter, and give the commissioners an opportunity to review, discuss, debate if necessary, and vote either yes or no on those community requests. And that's what needs to happen. And so when you talk about Safe and Welcoming, that's probably why that has not happened. And so those are questions best left for the current administration. But I know if I'm your mayor, Safe and Welcoming is going to be important to me because it's important to a vast majority of a huge minority of people within Wyandotte County. And it's just the right thing to do, but not just Safe and Welcoming. All issues that are of value and important to people in Wyandotte County, they will be important to a Mayor Tyrone Garner. And that's where community-driven and engaged leadership comes into play. It's not so much what I want or what the commissioners want or what the administrators want. It should always reflect, when we put things on the table for vote, what the people want. And you push those things forward and the people will see who voted yes or no on those issues. And then they can hold the elected body accountable if the vote did not reflect their desires or their values.
In your opinion, is public safety appropriately funded, underfunded, or overfunded in Wyandotte County in relation to the entire budget?
I believe that it is overfunded. That's it. Okay. It is overfunded, and I will secure. I believe that if you have two, let's just say you've got a chief and you have two deputy chiefs. One of those chiefs is making $120,000. The other chief is making $120,000. That's $240,000. One chief is basically, according to what was described to me, is sitting in an office doing nothing with absolutely no duties except to stay low. The other chief is attending to whatever landmark duties that a deputy chief may be required to do. That means you got one too many deputy chiefs if you can operate with only one and one remaining just getting their check. I think that that's a problem no matter where you are. You are looking at the exact same situation as a fireman who does not show up for a single day's work, but draws in nearly $1 million salary. The problem is we've got too much money going to safety and too much power in the hands of safety and too many people who do not feel safe.
Thank you. Tyron Garner?
Well, my response is that I believe that public safety is appropriately funded. What I've observed and what I believe, especially from some of the people that I've talked to that are in our public safety departments, is that that funding isn't being administered appropriately. And so one thing as your mayor, if I'm elected, is that I would insist that administration put forward in funding something that reflects that our police department be fully staffed, that our fire department is fully staffed, that we look at not shutting down fire stations, and that our public servants have the leadership and the resources and the support they need to keep us safe. That is of the utmost importance to me, because if people don't feel safe, either picking up 911 and calling for the police because something bad is happening, or they're calling the fire department because they're in crisis, and it takes an unreasonable amount of time for those public servants to get there to attend to whatever is needed, you're going to lose people that say, why should I pay these high taxes for an inadequate level of service and put my family and, or my business at risk? And they're going to leave. So I think that it's incumbent upon leadership. And the mayor has a lot of ability to make sure that that happens as far as what goes before the commission for vote, that our public safety officers are respected in a way that reflects them being properly funded with the resources they need to keep us all safe throughout Wyandotte County.
Shabbat, thank you very much for moderating this evening. And thank you very much to the candidates. Two of the five that were invited to participate that did make time to speak directly to you, their constituents and voters.
That ends our highlights from the Unified Government of Wyandotte County Mayoral Forum. Stay tuned for Voices from the Picket Line at Frito-Lay on strike in Topeka.
In these economic times of uncertainty, organized labor is in a battle for its very security. With the imminent threat of Social Security privatization, loss of jobs, distrust, and bad labor relations, we must realize that in our hands lies the future of our destiny. The work to be done begins and ends with you and me. I have faith that like the phoenix, the labor movement will rise out of the ashes of old, reborn, renewed, and recommitted to fight against injustice toward workers everywhere. When the contract's up and it's time to negotiate, but the boss says no way, we'll just give you one you're gonna hate. We need a contract. To have a decent contract for me and you. We need our contract. Won't you negotiate? We need our contract before it's too late. We need our contract to protect our rights. We need our contract.
Hi, this is Judy Ansel. The strike at Frito-Lay in Topeka is now in its third week. On Tuesday, I delivered almost $400 and some canned goods donated by a UMKC professor and by people who attended last Saturday's Wyandotte County Democratic Breakfast. There's been a lot of solidarity. Folks from UAW Local 31 at the GM plant in Fairfax were there that morning. While I was there, KU teaching assistants and someone with a CWA t-shirt showed up with aid. Of course, all this solidarity helps lift the workers' spirit and optimism. This is a large strike that has received a lot of national attention. It involves about 500 workers. In fact, one of the workers told me that union membership in this right-to-work state surged as they prepared to strike, up at least 200 from pre-strike levels. On July 1st, just before the strike began, we reported the following, which will give our listeners some background. The Topeka Frito-Lay plant is the second largest maker of Fritos, Sun Chips, Doritos, and the like in the U.S. Frito-Lay is owned by PepsiCo. Despite Pepsi's sizable profit increase the last 4 years, its workers haven't gotten a salary increase in 13 years. All they get is lump sums. There are also problems with excessive workloads and race discrimination at the plant. The union, Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers Union Local 218, had been in negotiations with Frito-Lay since September. The workers voted down three contract offers and on June 26 voted to strike 353-30. The strike began on July 5th. I wanted to find out how the workers were holding up and how determined they were to win improvements. We talked first to Matthew Miller, a 20-year employee. He was adamant in complaints about the forced overtime.
Why are they working so much overtime? Why don't they just hire people?
It's the second biggest plant in the country, and they just can't get enough people in here to work. And the people that they do get trained out here eventually leave because they just get slammed with overtime. And a lot of people do not want to work over 40, 50 hours because it's extreme. It can, with the heat or the cold, it gets extreme on both sides and people just don't like it.
This plant doesn't have any air conditioning?
It has some air conditioning, but not all the floor and not any in the warehouse has anything.
You must have some kind of forced overtime clause in your contract. How does that work?
Well, if they don't have enough labor to cover a certain area, they look for cross-trained people, which is myself and quite a few other operators, and they'll pull us out if we haven't come in early on our given shift and force us over.
Okay, and how much over can they do?
Up to 84 hours a week.
That's quite a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Is that something you're trying to change in the contract?
Yes. A lot of people are getting tired of being forced for suicide shifts, and which is working your normal shift and getting forced over for four more extra hours and then taking an 8-hour break and then coming in early and working another 12.
We asked Matthew how much he made in wages.
For like PMOs myself, it's 24.
What's a PMO?
Packaging machine operator. We operate the bag makers and bag the finished product that's made out of processing.
So is the starting wage much lower than that?
Yeah, like I believe packers are in the $18 or $19 range.
And they cannot find enough workers to work for that?
No. And I believe the warehouse is about a dollar more than a packer, and they're the hardest position to keep up with because loading trailers and stuff is pretty extreme.
So is Frito-Lay offering you an increase in wages, and especially in starting wages?
The highest they've offered us on this most recent contract was 2%. And that's about as high as I've known them to give like in the last few contracts.
And from what I read, you guys haven't had a raise in quite a while?
The warehouse and GES have had almost literally nothing for the last 10 years or more. They try to give some of the skilled positions a little increase, but it's nowhere near. They're not covering inflation enough out here.
What are you hoping for out of these negotiations and the strike?
I'm just hoping that eventually they can give us a cost of living raise or something. These people just really want to see some loyalty back from the company itself, because a lot of these guys have given 15, 20, 30 years out here, and they've never seen enough of a raise to feel appreciated.
Sounds like you're sending them a strong message.
Yeah, we hope so. We just hope that they understand that we did not want to do this, but they kind of forced it on us.
Do you think they're trying to decertify the union?
A lot of people believe so, and I wouldn't put it past them.
With 70 people crossing the picket line, that must be a fear for the union.
Yeah, they've been pulling some scare tactics, running these buses out here, making people think that they're busing a lot in and out of there, but all we've seen is a bunch of empty seats, running trucks out of here constantly with trailers. We know that a lot of them are not full. We can see a lot of the stores are empty, so they're not scaring most of us. They're scaring a few.
Have they hired scabs?
Yes.
You don't know how many?
Not for sure. I know they brought in a company even before the strike happened to try to alleviate the warehouse, but they just can't do what we've been doing for years.
Matthew suggested I talk to Esther Fanning, who has worked in the warehouse at Frito-Lay for 5 years. She's a single mother who originally is from Kenya. I asked her about the forced overtime issue, and she gave me her strategy for avoiding it.
If you want to avoid being forced, for example, if you're in first shift, if you want to avoid being forced to stay over till 7 p.m., it is safer for you to sign to come in at 3 in the morning so that when it comes to 3 p.m., you can actually clock out and go home.
Tell me what kind of toll that takes on your body. You're pretty young. But
oh, my goodness. I will tell you this, especially as a woman, I have seen my hormones rage in ways that I cannot even describe. It is extremely, it takes a huge toll on your body. We are not able to really get that rest to mentally recover, physically recover. You have no time to do anything else besides get ready for work. That's all. That's the aim of the day. Get ready for work. Forget what your kids have going on. Forget what your family has going on. You are basically getting ready to come to work each and every day. That's what your world and your life is revolved around.
How many kids do you have?
I have a set of twins. So I have a boy and a girl, and they're 9. When I came to this company, they were about... they had just turned about 4. I've had questions like, hey, mommy, do your bosses know you have kids? You're always at work, you know. We never get to do anything. And as time goes by, you realize you don't even know your children no more. You don't understand them anymore. And it's because you've been away from them for so long. You've lost touch. So,
have you been working 7 days a week?
I have for a while there because I was in the warehouse, GSB, and we'd work 7 days a week because I was an operator. So we'd be trying to finish out shipping.
You're listening to the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Judy Yancel. And we've been visiting with striking workers at the Frito-Lay strike line in Topeka. I asked Esther what other issues were important to her.
Yeah, the forced overtime, the better wages is some of the two things that we actually want to kind of see if we can get a fair contract when it comes to those.
I heard there were some allegations of discrimination. Is that anything you want to talk about?
Sure. It's not an allegation. It was true. There were a couple of young men, well, not young men, but a couple of men in the warehouse who were racially profiled. I don't know the details because by the time the story was coming out, the guys had quit their jobs, but it was just they felt kind of pushed out of those positions because of their race. Now, it was a situation that was quickly swept underneath the rug, in my opinion, because they settled out of court. They didn't go to, you know, there wasn't a long drawn trial or whatever. But as soon as they settled, we saw some people in management positions resigning, and a lot of shuffling within the managerial, you know, positions. And we did see them trying to bring some color into the warehouse. Beforehand, we did not have any managers in the warehouse who were black. After that, we have two right now. Before then, they had found a noose, and it was an issue that they just kind of brought a bunch of us together and addressed it. But before then, you know, it was kind of a no-go zone or no-go touch kind of topic, especially in the warehouse. They're really trying to cover, you know, their steps up, but I feel like they can do a better job at it. And I'm hoping moving forward they can actually make major steps into incorporating us people of color in there, because we do not feel represented. And there's always that fear to speak up. And I'll be honest, me speaking up when I'm out here kind of makes me feel like if I go back, will I have a target on my back because I'm speaking up? I'm a woman. I'm a black woman at that. So, you know, those kind of things. You know, if I speak up in there, I get really reprimanded. I've been suspended before for speaking up. But even someone of a different race speaks up, you know, they're kind of just handled, you know, just some kind of way. So I think as a black community, we should feel included in every single aspect of life, including us being workers in there. But when we feel like we are no one in there and we are given the hardest things to do, and when we speak up or voice something, we are made to look like the villain, I don't think that's fair.
So you're saying that there's discrimination in the way they distribute the work and the difficulty of the jobs?
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Esther referred us to Pleasant Desch. She's a third shift sanitation department employee who is also a trainer and a relief aide. She's been there for 5 years. Pleasant was really concerned about how she felt the plant had really gone downhill in the last few years, and she blamed it on the forced overtime. She said that forced overtime actually led to a lot of health and safety issues, especially during COVID.
The pandemic did not help staffing issues either, or the forcing issue.
Okay, no hurry.
And like we've watched the company do things like drop the pay on the warehouse side down by dollars, you know, and with that drop in what they're paying the employees, they also increased the score that they wanted them to hit on the warehouse side. So you're increasing the production that you want at a cheaper rate. And the same thing with the pandemic, you know, sales kind of took off, but so did the workload, you know, and with less staff to do the same amount of work with, too.
Did you have a lot of problems with COVID itself?
With COVID, it caused more absences. It caused more call-ins, you know, people either being exposed to someone who had it, then they're out quarantined for a couple weeks. Well, we're already short-staffed before COVID, so then you've got multiple people from multiple departments out being quarantined for 2 weeks at a time, so that definitely didn't improve matters any. But at the same time, you're not appreciating the ones who worked completely through the pandemic, you know, 7 days a week, 12 hours at a time. Instead, you're wanting more production and more workload out of them. Or because we're staff, hey, we need you to do your job and this person's job too. You know, we're going to increase the workload on you though. This plant is all about money and production. I know I've seen accidents and injuries happen. One of the ladies I work with on third shift had fingers amputated. She got them cut in a rotary airlock paddles that turn inside a machine. And from what I gather, at one point there was a guard on this machine, but it interfered with production and it would clog, so someone had removed it and it never got put back on. But right after her injury, it got put back on when OSHA was in here or coming. They're notorious for doing things of that nature. Same area, another gentleman had lacerations to his fingers on the upper level, same kind of rotary airlock paddle that turns. So injuries and things of that nature aren't uncommon, and it is not uncommon for them to just carry right along, keep it up and running, keep it going, or they're not very good about preventative things. It's after somebody gets hurt, then they want to step into place and do something. We didn't have Gatorade or electrolyte tablets in our break room until a lady had collapsed from heat exhaustion, and that kind of got aired out. Well, then now it's in the break room, but it's been hot. You know, that there's no preventative things in place until somebody gets hurt or something happens. In 2016, one of our warehouse guys had worked so many 7 days in a row for 4 or 5 months without a day off and he didn't live in Topeka, he lived in Lawrence. So, and he worked overnight shift, and one of the days on his drive home, he fell asleep at the wheel. He just, from being that tired and exhausted, totaled his car and ended up going to the hospital, having surgery on his arm. His arm was broken. And the sad thing was, is that he finally got a day off, you know, and was at least happy that he got a day off.
Finally, on our way out, we stopped at the union donation tent and talked to Mark McArdle. He is a former union business agent and is currently a shop steward. We asked Mark about the scabs.
We just saw a bus go by with scabs, and there were only two people on it. Tell us about the scabs. What do you know, Mark?
Well, there's two people on there, and those are employees that have bypassed the union. Those are employees they brought from other plants, and those are employees from Capstone, which are like prison release individuals.
From Kansas prisons?
From Kansas, yeah. So they bust them in the morning, and they bust them out at the end of the day, and they go back to jail. So,
have you talked to the governor about the use of prisoners for strike breaking?
We have not talked to the governor yet. She was supposed to come out here, but they said her schedule is keeping her from being out here right now. But we do plan on talking to her about this very issue. And we're hoping that, like I said, we can get with Frito-Lay today. We are at the negotiating table, and we are talking, and we're hoping that we can get this done and that we can address some of these very problems that we're having.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much.
So we called Governor Laura Kelly's office and spoke to Sam Coleman, her communications director. He talked to the Kansas Department of Corrections and assured us that this rumor of Kansas inmates working as scabs was not true in any way, shape, or form. He said the state has nothing to do with providing replacement labor. We called McArdle back, and he said that he's seen guys from Capstone, the temp agency that's providing staff during the strike, wearing ankle bracelets. There's a long history of employers breaking strikes by importing labor from out of state, even convicts. We called Frito-Lay in both Topeka and their headquarters in Texas. They didn't answer. Last night, after 3 days of negotiations, the union and company reached a tentative agreement. According to the Topeka Capital Journal, it includes new overtime language and a 3% raise in the first year of a 2-year contract and a 1% raise in the second year. McArdle told us he didn't have a sense of whether the members would approve it at ratification meetings tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. at a hotel. He said that Frito-Lay had canceled everyone's health insurance, even though they could have done so at the end of the month. That's putting a lot of pressure on people to ratify, especially if they have kids. Stay tuned for Washington Window on Workers. This is Judy Ansel. Hi, this is Judy Ansel, and with us is Mark Grunberg from Washington, D.C. with this month's Washington Window on Workers. And Mark, you want to talk about the campaign for the PRO Act. Tell me real briefly, what's the PRO Act?
The PRO Act is the biggest rewrite of labor law and the biggest pro-worker rewrite of labor law since the original labor law in 1935.
Go into any details on that?
I was going to say, name anything you can think of that a boss does against a worker to try to derail a union campaign. The PRO Act is designed to stop it in so many words.
Including abolishing right to work.
Including abolishing right to work, yes.
So the AFL-CIO just this week launched a big campaign to try to get Congress to pass the PRO Act. What's their strategy?
Their strategy is to hit and try to campaign in front of every single senator's office, for or against. If they're for, they'll thank them. If they're against, like the two Missouri senators and the two Kansas senators, they'll be there testifying, this is how this would help us. Why don't you vote for it, type thing.
Yeah, but good luck.
All week, rallies here, rallies there. And you can find that by going to a special part of the AFL-CIO website.
Oh, yeah. So if you go to AFLCIO.org, you can find it?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So two Democrats have not announced that they're going to vote for it. One is Kristen Sinema from Arizona, and the other is Mark Warner from Virginia. Do you have any idea why they're objecting or holding?
Sinema is walking a fine line in Arizona. This is a state that has only recently become a purple state. It used to be deep red. And she's still trying to figure out her way. Okay, who can I least antagonize? The corporate community or workers? And right now she's coming down more on the side of the corporate community. Unlike the other senator who has now endorsed the PRO Act, Kelly, Mark Kelly. We should note, by the way, Kelly is up next year. So.
Interesting.
As for Warner, nobody can figure him out. He hasn't said a peep about the PRO Act.
Huh. Interesting. I guess that workers in the unions in Virginia are going to be sending him a big message.
Mm-hmm. Except they've got another 6 years before he's up again.
Oh, well. Yeah. So they also need 10 Republicans to overcome a Senate filibuster.
Yes.
Any idea of who they're going to get?
I can think of a couple of possibles, but I can't think of any definites. The possibles that come to mind, well, one is a constant waffler, Collins of Maine. Another, whom I think would actually be more open to it, is Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. she's got a lot of unionists up there. Alaska's the fourth most unionized state in the country. Right. As far as the others, your guess is as good as mine. Everybody else is over in the far right camp and whipped by Mitch McConnell into falling into line.
Yeah, so. Well, then. So what can we do here?
Well, let's see. You're in Kansas and Missouri. Check out the offices of Roy Blunt and Hawley and the two Kansas senators and get in their faces, in so many words. And, right. Be out there every day. Yeah.
So let's hope that our local labor movement is doing that.
Yes.
And we'll, of course, keep our listeners posted if they are. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mark Gruenberg, for giving us the update on the PRO Act.
You're quite welcome.
And now for the Heartland Labor Forum calendar, July 21st, 2021. Our calendar will be posted on our Facebook page, so you can find it there for any links. First item, how wage suppression was caused by policy decisions made on behalf of the rich and corporations. That's Thursday, July 29th at 3 p.m., and this is put on by the Economic Policy Institute. Go to epi.org/unequalpower/events to register. United Association of Labor Education School for Women Workers online, August 5th through 7th. Go to uale.org. With so few calendar items, we'll do a quick news story. Today, the Missouri Supreme Court unanimously ruled in favor of the plaintiffs who sued to force the state to expand Medicaid. The court said that Governor Mike Parson's administration must follow the constitutional amendment voters approved expanding Medicaid eligibility. Voters passed Medicaid expansion with a 53% majority last August, extending eligibility for Medicaid to about 275,000 low-income Missourians. The Kansas City Star says those residents will almost certainly now be allowed to join the state health care program despite the efforts of the Republican-led state legislature to block them by refusing to budget money for their enrollment. Parson in May nixed the expansion after getting a budget without additional funds for the expansion this year. Expansion advocates soon sued Parson's administration. On Thursday, the Supreme Court ruled that the Department of Social Services and the state's Medicaid program, Missouri Health Net, are bound by the constitutional amendment governing eligibility, regardless of the amount of money lawmakers put toward the program. That's it for tonight's show. Tune in next week to the Heartland Labor Forum. The show is called Yes, We'll Get Medicaid Expansion in Missouri. The Heartland Labor Forum is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Check out the rich diversity of programming related to workers and unions at laborradionetwork.org. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Keith Washburn, and stay tuned for the Thursday night special, Stand Up. Listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss, and you can talk back too. Send us your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to heartlandlaborforumkkfi@gmail.com.
Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming schedule, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here at 90.1 FM KKFI. Where you come from to struggle.